The World Tomorrow. Garner Ted Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends around the world. Just because it happens, is it news? And if it's news, should you know about it? The people's right to know is an important principle when it's exercised by a free press, by free-spoken electronic media to report on current trends and conditions, to report unbiased news and happenings, to probe and report even upon such sensitive and possibly scandalous material as was Watergate. But does the people's right to know ever need to be controlled by good taste, by common sense? Just because it happens, is it news? Today, in a pornographic society with X-rated movies, X-rated bookstores, advertising novelties for sale, X-rated newspapers and magazines, our society seems determined to create, in modern 20th century detail, another Sodom and Gomorrah. Decency, respect, privacy, all are impugned as watchwords of a decadent age, while openness, the gay liberation movement, be yourself, do your own thing, these become catchphrases of the new morality. The total lack of good taste now spills into magazines, newspapers, and electronic media too often. Recently, it included a book written about a former president, a book about his alleged affair with his secretary, a book written about a former president affair written by his son. It includes the televised interview with the president's widow and her answers about her husband's alleged flirtations. It includes articles circulated about the affairs of still another president. Those articles still in circulation while the widow is with us. And still another dead president's personal life is suddenly a bestseller as a prominent author links his name with a glamorous movie queen, now dead. A female author writes a book about her personal amorous affairs with a prominent senator, leaving almost nothing to the imagination as to who she means, and a biography written by the publisher of Playboy magazine credits him with a Solomon-like achievement of having slept with about 2,000 babes. Because it happens, is it news, really? Thankfully, our bathrooms don't yet have glass walls, and our stomachs aren't covered with transparent substances instead of skin and clothing, and thankfully, it's still a popular notion that some bodily processes are to be accomplished in private, and some parents still believe not every word spoken or picture revealed is for their children to see. But somewhere, we've been missing some important values. In our physical diet, we wouldn't think of eating garbage if we could help it, or ingesting dirt or spoiled food or ground glass or poison. But in our mental diet, we are what we eat physically, and we are what we think mentally. And the truth is clear. This bizarre search for filthy linen in every closet is the exercise of those who, knowing their own depravity, double standards, and hypocrisy, seek to bring every other person down to their own level. One of the great American pastimes has become that of impugning and ridiculing leaders. Somehow, we begin to believe if we can make them lesser men than ourselves, which in many cases might prove to be impossible. But if we can try, if we can somehow bring them down, show them up, disclose their normal common humanity, we will have proved an important point to someone for some reason. And it's all being done under the disguise that people have a right to know. An ancient seer said, "Listen not to every word that is spoken, lest you hear a servant curse you." Good advice. But not if you want to listen not only to every word your employee says in public, but you've also got his phone tapped. Now, thankfully, I think there are still millions of Americans who believe there are many things about themselves that I don't have a right to know. If I were to ask them, they would tell me simply, "That's none of your business." And, you know, I happen to believe they are right. But then scandal sells. Pornography profits. Slop sells. That's what people want to buy. As you look at the networks now vying for the new shows with huge half or one-page ads in the newspapers and the television publications, you look at the whole new host of sitcoms of family and ethnic groups, blacks, Chicanos, various families portraying a completely unrealistic comedy situation, way of life for these minorities, which gets some of them a little upset and excited. As you look at the whole new stream of cops and robbers, the whole new stream of way-out weirdo-type TV series, or if you look at the marquees of motion picture theaters, and you see what is available, violence in every form, being swallowed by giant sharks, being thrown out of hotels, leaping to your death as the flames lick at a huge building. It's all dealing with death, with cataclysm, with violence of some kind. That's what sells today. If it's violent, if it's evil, if it's filthy, if it's wrong, if it's rotten, if it exposes, if it scandalizes, if it is slop, then it sells. And now, as if to top it all off, one of the great extravaganzas that is being advertised, at least in the newspaper, among all of the X-rated movies, the newest super extravaganza is called Sodom and Gomorrah. Sodom and Gomorrah. And you know, that title seems to come uncomfortably close to the truth, doesn't it? I happen to believe that may be a very accurate title. You could virtually title an awful lot of the motion pictures and some of the television series and many of the books and the magazines, the journals that you read, Sodom and Gomorrah. Because that is precisely, it seems, where we are determined to head. It's what we want to become. People seem to want the ultimate orgy, where everybody takes his clothes off in public and has a gigantic orgy. That seems to be where it's at, what it's all about. We want no more barriers, no more bars, no more taboos, no more sense of decency, of correctness, of justice, of responsibility. No sense of values whatsoever. Let's have the ultimate nihilism, the ultimate anarchy, where each individual does his own thing. You know, a lot of people would get very angry to be told God's law is to be obeyed, and that when they break God's law, meaning the Ten Commandments as magnified and all the rest of the Bible, then those laws are going to break them. But nevertheless, that happens to be the message of the Bible. It was the message of the prophets of old. It's the message of the New Testament, which merely is, in a sense, a book about cause and effect. A book of promises for blessings for obedience, and promises for cursings for disobedience. A book of right and wrong. A book about hazards and benefits. A book that tells you there are valid living principles, vital principles, which are just as active, just as living, as are the laws of physics, chemistry, science that we can define. Laws that have to do with explosives in a laboratory, the propulsion of a bullet, the flight of an aircraft through the air. Laws that have to do with inertia, with gravity, with the trajectory of objects hurtled in our own atmospheric environment. Those laws are active. They live. They are like a living force. We have to get in harness with them. We have to be controlled by them. When people design an aircraft and it proves to be inefficient, if the loading of the wing, as it's called, the lift that is produced over drag, is insufficient to carry the weight of that aircraft in certain conditions, then there have to be alterations in the structure. There have to be different wings designed, different centers of gravity, different types of shapes, different methods of propulsion. We have what are called now today STOL, short takeoff and landing aircraft, and VTOL aircraft in the military, the British Harrier, vertical takeoff and landing, and now a common sight in some of the big city airports. Siphoning off some of the airline passengers out to smaller areas are the short field takeoff and landing aircraft. Some of them look rather grotesque. The gear don't tuck up. They've got big drooping wings. They're rather ugly. Big bulky wings with a lot of things hanging out. They look rather dirty from an aerodynamic standpoint, but they're very efficient. And they're designed according to law. Computers can now help in the design of aircraft. And when scientists design aircraft, or for that matter, racing automobiles, or for that matter, computers themselves, they're having to deal with known laws. They're having to get in harmony with laws. They can't break those laws. You can't make a brick fly. All you can do is drop it. Now, we know that about physics, chemistry, inertia, gravity, the laws that really keep us on this earth and affect us every day, whether we're aware of them or not, but we don't seem to know that there are living laws about our character, about our personality, about the quality of life we live. Laws that have to do with the way we are to act toward our neighbor. the way we are to act as a personality, the way we are to act toward our God. Why is that? Is it because there are too few people reminding us that such laws exist? Is it because so many pulpits are devoid of power? Is it because so many people think those laws are called the Ten Suggestions? Today we are reaping a harvest of crime, of broken homes, of frustrated, turned-off, nihilistic people who have no real goals in life save to grasp, to seize, to struggle to get, to try to carve out for themselves some kind of temporary physical security. We have people who have no more conscience of ripping off the organization for which they work, of taking its salary while working against it as hard as they possibly can, of stealing materials or equipment or supplies or money directly from the very organization paying the salary, so that white-collar crime in the United States makes all organized crime look like a bunch of Sunday school picnic pikers by comparison. So, we become a nation of criminals. Look at the statistics of what is happening. 70% of white-collar workers are at least part-time, if not full-time, crooks and criminals. Yet, 40% of Americans can be found in church on any given weekend and believe in God. Some kind of a God, some sort of a church, some sort of religion. Now, wait just a minute. That's more than 100%. Some of those statistics overlap. 70% of the white-collar workers? That's not of the population, no, but when you actually conduct research interviews, which have been conducted by institutes and universities, you will find that the broad majority of people in the $25,000 bracket plus in the management level of business admit they got where they are dishonestly. When you get right down to it, we all believe, all of us, that everybody else is dishonest. Why? Well, because maybe we're looking inside and we're, in a sense, agreeing that we have some rather shattered moral values. Maybe it's because the average person knows what a crook he is. He is so suspicious of everybody else's motives and intentions. That, I think, is even behind some of the search in media for ripping off what they feel to be the disguise of public leaders. Anyone who seems to be straight, who seems to be right, is immediately suspect. And then begins the never-ending pursuit, the never-ending search to try to prove that that individual is as low as the individual doing the search, as the individual striving to prove it. The more it seems we can put others down, the more we can stand on their prostrate bodies, their wrecked, wretched lives, the more we can elevate or exalt ourselves. It's a strange exercise. The exercise in the United States these days of everybody fulfilling the ancient old housewives cliche, the pot calling the kettle black. Everybody accusing almost everybody. Well, where are we headed? Where is it taking us? We've got civil rights struggles still going on, busing and anti-busing riots and demonstrations, crime in the streets. Crime has moved very much ahead, out of all proportion to population, and some of the greatest area of crime and criminal experience is in the white-collar area, where it's estimated now that it's in a range of $40 to $50 billion a year. That's an incredible amount of money. 75 million shoplifting thefts occur yearly in the United States. Security experts estimate that if we include office and work-related tools, people ripping off equipment and material and supplies, and that could include anything as tiny, really, which in its own way amounts up to a staggering amount of money, is paper, stationery, envelopes, stamps, petty cash, pencils, pens, paper clips, you name it. If it's there, if it's in the drawer, on the desk, if it belongs to the boss, people are going to rip it off. And so the combined loss is a staggering $40 to $50 billion per year, and 70% of the population is a part-time or full-time white-collar thief. Take a look at internal bank crime. Annual losses from United States bank employee dishonesty and embezzlement soared from $14.1 million in 1963. Listen to this, in one decade went from just over $14 million, a whopping amount, to 135.5 million in 1973. The Department of Commerce says the last figure is six times the amount of money taken by armed bank robbers in the same year. Armed bank robbers, the sensationalized robbery that is fair for television series, for cops and robbers shows, for motion pictures and books, for exciting whodunit novels. That was worth a $22 million ripoff. But those dirty crooks that work inside got away with $135.6 million in 1973, and that was several years ago. One security official at one top organized national security system estimates 8 to 10% of the working force are hardcore systematic thieves that individually steal millions of dollars of goods over a period of months. Altogether, the white-collar ripoff exacts a tremendous amount of loss on everybody. Because, you see, it's passed along to you like a crime tax, like a thievery tax, like a dishonesty tax. It adds up to several hundred dollars to your household budget every single year. That means that when you see that overturned, abandoned shopping cart on the street corner near your house, the young kid, the housewife, whoever, decided to go not just to the parking lot and load the car, and then one practice that I've never been able to understand because I've always been very circumspect to do the opposite, is to leave it in the parking lot. I always turn around and take it back inside the store. I don't do a lot of shopping myself very much, but when I do, I always am careful to take that cart back in. People look at you like you've gone crazy and out of your head for doing it, but nevertheless, I feel it's an obligation. I took it out, why not take it back? It just takes a moment, gives me just that much more time to walk around the parking lot a little bit and kind of watch the rest of the people. But you know, when you see that thing out in the street corner, you're paying for it. Now, you don't take it back either. That's always amazed me. You can drive around Los Angeles, you can see those things in all neighborhoods, especially go around the blocks, you know, 6, 8, 10 blocks near any supermarket, and you're going to find, eventually, a number of those abandoned shopping carts. Now, they cost a lot of money. They're made basically out of steel and heavy construction with those wheels that caster in all directions, and it costs money for those stores to provide them. When they lose them, there's an attrition rate, and they've got to cover it by passing it along to the consumer. And so in every way, several hundred dollars per household per year is being shelled out for losses from theft, from stock shrinkages, from siphoning off of money, from management corruption, from kickbacks and under-the-table payments, from bribery, embezzlement, the endless variety of accepted but dishonest and illegal business and sales practices, like conducting sales, claiming it's a markdown when it's a markup. Enough food is stolen from the nation's supermarkets to feed everybody in San Francisco and Boston for 1 year. In 1972, $3.5 billion was shoplifted, while $6.9 billion was stolen by employees. As a matter of fact, you know, those supermarket carts are stolen to the tune of somewhere between 10 to 20%. 1 out of 10 or 2 out of 10, it's in there somewhere, are stolen from these stores, and of course then they pass along the loss to the average person. Well, we're concerned with a national crime rate that is absolutely out of all proportion to the population, but what can be done about it? There doesn't seem to be any justice in the land. Here in the book of Ezekiel in the 7th chapter in verse 23, it says, "Make a chain, for the land is full of bloody crimes, and the city is full of violence." And then it begins to say, as a result of that, there is going to be a national punishment of terrible consequence. Well, crime soared by 18%. In the first 3 months of 1975, before that it surged 16% in 74. 8 million serious crimes will take place this year. And you know, it's like a fulfillment of biblical prophecy. And when I tell you that the average American urban baby boy, born from 1974 onward, faces a greater risk of being killed, the victim of murder, than his counterpart faced during World War II in the army, during war. Maybe that's one way to get it across. I'll say that again. The average urban American baby boy born from 1974 onward is more likely to die the victim of murder than was the average American soldier in uniform to die in combat during World War II. Over in Ezekiel 9 and verse 9, it says, "The land is full of blood, and the city full of perverseness," or injustice, as one version has it. "For they say, the Lord has forsaken the earth, and the Lord sees not." And you know, that's people's attitude. God doesn't see, God doesn't hear, God is blind, God doesn't see what we're doing down here below. So as long as it's dark, or you're behind the barn, or you're around the corner, you're out of sight of fellow human beings, you can get away with it. There is no way to make you pay. Oh, yes, there is. Because you are breaking living laws if you break laws of that nature, and they're going to break you eventually. They exact a penalty. That penalty will be collected. It will be exacted. But you know, we don't convict those who commit crimes. And there's a new kind of activity now. A new kind of recycling. Recycling criminals. Failure to convict felons is one outstanding weakness of the entirety of the American system of criminal justice. In New York City, for example, 80% of felony arrests result in the reduction of charges to misdemeanors or outright dismissal. 80%. Imagine a felony. 80%. 8 out of 10. They get a very much lower charge, like a misdemeanor, or they simply get it dismissed or they're out on probation. Criminologists estimate that of all serious crimes, only 12% lead to arrest. Listen to this. Of all the crimes, rape, murder, mugging, mayhem, arson, automobile theft, robbery, burglary, crimes against a person, only 12% are arrested. Now, that 12% represents 100% of all the arrests, okay? Now, of those, only 6% of that figure lead to convictions. Now, that 6% becomes your 100% convicted. Out of those, only 1% go to jail. You got to make a chart to see that. You got to take a great big huge box and label it 100% and call it crime. Take a little chunk out of the corner of it that represents 12%. Those are arrested. Now that box, blow that up into a huge big box. That's 100% of arrests. Take a little tiny chunk out of the corner of that one. That's 6%, and that represents convictions. Now blow that up to a huge big box. That's 100% of convictions. Take a little tiny, less than a postage stamp nick out of the corner of that. That's 1% who go to jail. Now go back and do that on some kind of a blackboard. You'd have to have a room as big as a barn to even show up with a postage stamp size of those who actually go to jail who commit crime. It must be down into the thousandths of the percentages. You know, today we want to recycle criminals. We put them right back out on the streets where they came from, thinking this is the way to solve the problem. In this current number of The Plain Truth that I'm looking at, and using excerpts from on this program, are several articles on the subject of crime in the United States. One on the fact that there is no justice in the land. Another on how every ninth shopper is shoplifting, the alarming frequency of it. Another two-page article on the white-collar criminal, how professional crooks are pikers by comparison. Some of the statistics I've given you, and the inside job and what happens on a national average. Shoplifters commit only 25% of theft from retail stores, while the rest of it, 75% of it, is done by employees. And there are tips, by the way, in this current number of The Plain Truth on avoiding consumer fraud. Several very important tips on how to avoid being defrauded. You know, recently there was another big land ripoff I heard of in the Southern California area. As a matter of fact, I was copying down a telephone number just last night on one of these land deals that were going to sell me a whole parcel of 5 acres for a very small amount of money. I decided, since I get up to that area once in a while, they would think the average Angelino wouldn't have a chance, but I do. I'm going to go look at that property. And what I'm going to do is start following up on some of this stuff, and maybe even if it turns out to be what I think it is, we'll take along our cameras, and we'll show you exactly what piece of property you're being offered for your money on television and describe it on the radio. Also in this current number is my Speaks Out column on the subject of crime, recycling criminals. You know, earlier in Sacramento, California, a young woman follower of convicted murderer Charles Manson aimed a loaded gun at President Ford at nearly point-blank range. The pistol didn't go off. We all know by now the whole world was rocked and sobered, though, by the attempt. You realize that we were within a hair's breadth of having Nelson Rockefeller for the president. And then I saw in the Los Angeles Times, on the second page, the article to end all articles. Here was a series of three pictures. How to. The article told how this girl, the Manson follower, didn't know how to correctly work the receiver on a .45 military automatic to actually put a shell in the firing chamber. And so in a series of three pictures, it showed how to insert the clip, pull the receiver back, which cocked the gun and placed the bullet in, and then it was ready to fire, so that all the millions of people who saw the Times article would now know how to operate a .45 pistol. The idea being, look, if you're going to kill somebody, at least you ought to know how to shoot the gun, I guess. It's telling how, and it's one of these how-to. It isn't telling people to go kill anybody, of course. That isn't the point. I just don't understand how in the world, why we would want to do that, any more than I understand putting the address and telephone number of someone who informed the police about a criminal act in the newspapers. But neither did I understand the televised show, which did the same thing on television before a live audience, of showing how to operate a .45 automatic. Is that really something we need to get out to the average, uninitiated, uninformed public? I ask the media. Do we need, when we see a drug death, to show people exactly how to ingest drugs? Do we need, when we find various bizarre methods of ingesting drugs, to do a complete in-depth documentary where we show everybody else how to do it? Is it important to put in a newspaper methods by which people can kill one another? Or is that something which ought to be discarded? It's not news. The fact the gun didn't go off, that's news. That's fine. Report it. But do we need to show how to make it go off? I don't know. I don't think I would ever do that in the Plain Truth. I think the Plain Truth would avoid that particular kind of journalism. You want to write for this current number and get these articles on crime and what's happening. It was a close call for Mr. Ford, but for many of his countrymen, the story ends in tragedy day after day. Statistics have shown that homicide is increasing so fast in the larger American cities that 2% of all babies born today will probably be murdered, and the actual figure may be closer to 5%. On this current number of the Plain Truth, you'll get those articles as well as many, many others, and you can have it by return mail. All you need to do is to address your letter to Garner Ted Armstrong, Post Office Box 345, Sydney, New South Wales. That's Garner Ted Armstrong, Box 345, Sydney, New South Wales. Remember, there's absolutely no request for money. It is free. It's gratis to you. The address again is Garner Ted Armstrong, Box 345, Sydney, New South Wales. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have been listening to The World Tomorrow. If you would like more information, write to Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales. That's Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales.